SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back into Betting Around the Rim, BATR. I'm Kevin Walsh, and that is Martino Puccio. We're going to continue to look through the NBA. Win totals, we're definitely going to be highlighting the Washington Wizards during this hour as well. But Martino, before we get into all of it, man, how are we doing? How are we feeling about this NBA restart?
Not bad. I feel like everybody that we expect to head there, that thinks they have a chance at the title, is going, and then everyone else who, you know, is kind of on the outside looking in, doesn't really have a shot, doesn't have much to play for, you know, like the Wizards of the world, the Nets of the world, those guys are dropping out. We see the limited time with the Suns and stuff, and that's something you and I have said and thought was going to happen, because at the end of the day, how much do a lot of these guys have to play for? And especially with the Nets, like, how many of them are testing positive? It was even, like, crazier, though. We didn't even get the names of the Nets who originally tested positive from months ago, and now these guys have tested positive. So, I mean, Brooklyn alone, like, I'm not that stunned by it. It'll be cool to see Jamal and Michael Beasley there. I'm thinking about some Beasley overs on a lot of player props. Yeah. Just kinda, it just feels like he's so capable of doing that.
And he's going to shoot a bunch. Games.
He is, although I think LaVert is going to be around the 20 field goal attempts per game kind of area. I really do believe that. I think Jamal will be like that second unit kind of. Listen, I love Jamal Crawford. I love his crossovers, but a lot of people really have a hard time admitting how much of a decline he had for whatever reason. People like to romanticize, I guess.
I think Caris LeVert, I think you're right. I think he is going to come out of this like, I think people are going to be much higher on the Brooklyn Nets next year because of what Caris LeVert will likely do for this eight-game stretch, plus probably four playoff games on top of it. I think Caris LeVert is going to go out there and do really, really well. Let me ask you. They didn't give us a – you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the win totals. We're talking about everything here during this hour. Yeah. But for the win totals, they haven't given us a Brooklyn Nets win total. I just think they're very uncertain – what to do with this team. When I ask you, right, based on the team that they're sending there, are they better than the Wizards? And are they still better than the Phoenix Suns?
I think they're better than the Wizards and not better than the Suns.
Okay.
Suns pretty much have everyone you could ask for the most part. And I think's really good, even though they have the limited minutes. Wizards, I mean, to see what Rui Hachimura can do for me, but
right.
I mean, that's about it. I think the important thing, though, with the Nets that I really think I wanted to get off and discuss, because you guys brought it up last hour, is being high on the Nets going into next year. The important thing here is that, and this has been made, and like, this is another soccer reference, right? I think it's a pretty good analogy. So when a team is qualified for the World Cup, right? And other teams are, like, facing off against them, and, you know, they still need to get into the World Cup and all this stuff. But there's players on the USA that are given 150%, and some of the players on the team that's trying to qualify for the World Cup, like Panama, for example, are like, why are you going so hard? You have nothing to play for. My spot's not guaranteed at the World Cup. A lot of these guys' spots on the Brooklyn Nets aren't guaranteed next year. This is a mini showcase for them on top of Jacque Vaughn and whoever else you want to discuss. I don't think it's fair for Jacque Vaughn because he is not going to be dealing with some of the guys that he will have to deal with if they want to win a championship. But right now, there was a lot of stuff up in the air with the roster. And you know what? Guys need to earn it here. Does Caris LeVert take over and say, I am the clear-cut third guy here? Does Jared Allen say, look, I am this valuable to the team, it would be unwise to trade me? So I think that's a lot of the stuff that you're going to be seeing. I think they're going to be going out playing very hard. So it'll be stuff like that. And Jamal Crawford, this could be his last like 8 to 12 games that we ever see from him in the NBA. Michael Beasley, I mean, who knows what's good with him? So I think he's going to just put out because he's still going to want to vie for another roster spot wherever it may be next year. So all those things there. And you know what? I know you didn't ask, but I think a fair total for the Nets would be like 3.5 for me, maybe.
Okay.
Around there. Yeah. Around there.
I know. I think that's great insight. Because I am curious. I think at some point they will give us that number, and I think it'll be interesting to see how they look to approach it. I could see it being a bit lower than that 3.5.
Yeah.
To where there might be some value then potentially given to us on this team. Let's talk a little bit about the guys showing up as well. Like, we've seen, you know, Jared talked about DeAndre Ayton showing up with his whole gaming set. We saw Pat Bev. I thought Pat Bev was hilarious with all of his white tees for days. J.R. Smith went live last night on Instagram. There's been some pushback in terms of the quality of the rooms. I kind of just want to see if I can set the record straight on that, because I saw some people like, oh, the quality of this is terrible, this, that, and the third. There was an exchange that took place after we saw some of the food photos that came out between Mark Stein and Donovan Mitchell. So Mark Stein tweeted out, food in the NBA bubble changes after quarantines are completed. Player meals won't look like airline trays after the first 48 hours. Donovan hilariously just wrote, how you know? Which is like, I thought was great, because it's like, why do you know this and I don't, right? Like, what a relatable frustration that for Donovan. But then Stein just wrote, he goes, it's supposed to become more of a real hotel experience in the three team hotels once you guys are no longer stuck in quarantined in your rooms. So that was kind of the thing for me, these bare rooms without sheets and these meals that are underwhelming are going to be for the quarantine process, which is, I think, will be done within the week. And then these guys will be set up in the luxury, lavish rooms that they are expecting.
Yeah, I mean, look, it is what, I mean, it is odd. Like Donovan was saying, like, how he doesn't know. I mean, there's a lot of things these players don't know all the time. I think I remember KD was on Bill Simmons' podcast, and he was talking about how, like, when news breaks on Twitter and all that stuff, he's like, yeah, honestly, like, I don't know half the stuff. If I see, like, Woj tweet it, he's like, I guess it's right. I just got to assume, because he's rarely wrong. Yeah, so just like Mark Stein, like, I trust Mark Stein in his reports to give accurate information. And it does make sense. I highly doubt that's what it was going to be. I am a part of one of those families that has been to Disney World way too many times. I've been over 10 times. I've been way too many times. Yeah. I haven't been in a while, just because, I don't know, I'm 25. I've grown out of that stuff. I'm not going to be wearing Mickey Mouse ears there. Look, they'll be fine for the time being. They'll have to deal with it. Like, oh my God, it's not the end of the world. And it doesn't look that bad. It's not MLS bad. If you see some of the stuff for the MLS, MLS is really dreadful. Because they don't have to go through their, like, little mini quarantine. It's you know, it's, that's it for them.
It's not great. That's what they're doing. We're going to talk about some of these win totals as well, and I want to throw one at you right away, because it actually might have been my favorite win total that I saw, and it involves your Boston Celtics.
Oh boy.
So they're at 4.5. The over is -145. I think that's a very reasonable price to pay. You tell me. So we know that they're dogs against Milwaukee.
Sure.
Portland, Miami, Brooklyn, Orlando, Memphis, Washington. I think they're favored over all of those teams. No?
Except for the Milwaukee one as of except right now.
The only other one is Toronto. And I think they could maybe, depending on the spot, I think it'll be close.
Listen,
I think we're just looking at a team here that might be favored. They're going to be favored in at least 6 of their games. Maybe 7. They're going to be pushing, I think, for this 2 seed, maybe more than people. I'd love that as a prop bet. I'd love that as a prop bet over at the FanDuel Sportsbook. But I think the Celtics are one of those teams they're going to come out to compete. And even if they're resting, that's when Brad Stevens seems to be at his most dangerous. I like the Celtics over that 4.5 number.
I like the number over as well. And, you know, the thing about it, too, is exactly what I talked about last week with the Bucks. If we're going to have to play the Bucks, I'd rather play them in the first game than any other game. I understand they're able to shake off some of that rust in the preseason little mini schedule that we'll get into. But at the same time, look, why not take them on? And that number still has not moved for that line in that game. It's still 5. I'm still a little surprised by it. I don't understand it. I understand everyone's going to be hammering Milwaukee, but how much does Milwaukee really have to play for besides conditioning in these 8 games? They don't have a lot to play for. That seed is locked up. You only have to maybe worry about the Lakers if you stumble a lot for, you know, the number one overall seed. But again, who cares? That doesn't even matter anymore, right? It's just about matchups at this point. So you're going to be playing a very tough team in the finals regardless if they get there. Yeah, for the Celtics, yeah, I mean, like, look, why wouldn't they get over this? I think they have a lot to prove and show for, because a lot of people I've been seeing in general in the media, they just don't believe in them for some reason. And I kind of get where they're coming from. I get where it's, in terms of beating Milwaukee in a 7-game series, I don't see that happening. But I do see them being able to beat them in a game. I mean, why wouldn't they be able to? They beat them last year when they were absolutely disastrous, right? Yeah. It's in the one game. I know it was the one game, and the rest, the wheels fell off. But still, this is a much different team than it was last year.
Sure.
And you know what? They have one of the easier schedules. We've been through it too. We saw the strength of schedule for them. You just went through all those team names. I'm gonna like kind of stay away from those lines and why they might be favorites, because it's still a little too early for that, because we got to see what happens. Because what's gonna happen if they beat Milwaukee in that first game? Are they favored in every other game?
I think they might just be. I think they might just be. And to me, that no matter what, as long as they're putting out their full normal starting lineup. Portland, Miami, Brooklyn, Orlando, Memphis, Washington, their favorites, all of them. The only question is the Toronto Raptors. Let me see if I can find one of the more recent games between those teams. There was a long gap. The last time they played was actually back in December, December 28th. It was a game in Boston. Wow. A game in Boston that the Celtics were 7.5-point favorites. Now, the Raptors actually went out there and beat them pretty handedly by 16 points. Yeah. Probably one of the more impressive wins that the Raptors have under their belt. But also, they played on the 25th in Toronto, and the Celtics won by 16 points. Now, this is the problem with the Raptors.
It's weird, because the home team would usually win, by the way.
All the time in those matchups. The funny thing is, both of those teams were battling injuries. Boston were 4-point favorites, actually, in that game in Toronto. And that's probably – I think you've talked about this quite a bit, and rightfully so. Those were two of the more banged-up teams in the NBA this year. So I think even some of the matchups that we got with them, it's hard to say how representative those were of what those lines might look like. They did play game number two against one another in Boston. It was a 2.5-point Celtics were favored. So they're about on par with one another. But let's come up. We're coming up against this break. And when we are back, we're going to be joined by Chase Hughes, who covers the Washington Wizards for NBC Sports Washington, to talk about one of the most interesting teams that the NBA restart is offering us. Do they have anything to play for? There's no Bertans. There's no Beal. Their win total is 1.5. They're 6.5-point dogs to the Phoenix Suns. Nobody's buying the Wizards. Maybe Chase will talk us into this team. That's what's up next here on Betting Around the Rim.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, here we go. Back here on Betting Around the Rim. I am Kevin Walsh, and now I am joined by Chase Hughes, who covers the Washington Wizards for NBC Sports Washington. Chase, thanks for jumping in here with us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So the Wizards have certainly, they've had no shortage of storylines before we've even really got off the ground here. But I want to kind of go back when, you know, the NBA decided to go this format for the restart. The Wizards were one of those teams, it was up in the air. Were you surprised to see them actually find their way into this bubble and be competing?
I wasn't surprised to see them make it because, you know, of all the proposals that were put out there in terms of the numbers of teams, it seemed like most of them would include the Wizards. It seemed like the idea that they would only start with the playoffs got shot down pretty quickly. So I wasn't surprised that they made it. I was surprised that they were the last team included, the 22nd team out of 22. And I was very surprised with how they changed the draft lottery odds and how that could very directly affect the Wizards, because they are the 22nd team, which means they're ninth from the bottom, but the bottom 8 teams in the NBA are locked in. So if the Wizards go there and go 0-8, go 1-7 or something like that, there's a distinct scenario where they go into draft lottery night with worse odds than teams with better records than them. You know, they're only a game and a half ahead of the Charlotte Hornets, who are the eighth worst team in the league. So the Wizards, in one sense, can look up and say, all right, we have no reason to tank. Let's just go for the playoffs. But if they look down and they bottom out in Orlando, things could really go wrong for them.
And they are one of the teams that seems like they've tried to weigh how valuable going out there and really making this push for the playoffs is. I want to talk about that kind of in pieces. The first news that came out was Davis Bertans, with his impending free agency and coming off of a career year, had one of the best shooting seasons of any player. Then the factor in that he's a 7-footer in today's NBA, he's going to have a nice payday on his way. What was your reaction to Davis Bertans being one of the first guys, actually, that made that decision to opt out of the restart?
Well, I wasn't surprised by that decision because he had so much more to lose than he had to gain. This is a guy who's torn his ACL twice before, and he's setting up for the biggest payday of his career. 8 games, I mean, I don't think there's anything more that he could prove. He already shot 43% this year from three on over 8 attempts a game. He may have established himself as the best three-point shooting big man in the NBA, and he's going into a relatively thin crop of free agents. So he has a chance to get paid. Now, obviously, that could be affected by the league's finances and the salary cap lowering, but he's going to be in high demand, and I think he saw a situation, and the Wizards see a situation because they understand his decision, where even if things went really well for them in Orlando and they made the playoffs, they're probably losing pretty badly to the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round. Right. So I think for Davis Bertans, obviously, you know, Evan Fournier and some people have criticized his decision looking at money and his free agent future over, you know, the team. But I think the team understands it. And of course, the team wasn't going to talk negatively about him because he's their number one offseason priority and they want to make sure that relationship is intact.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that intrigued me. When I first saw this decision, I initially read it as maybe Bertans would be leaving. I thought maybe he would be able to kind of under the table handshake agreement, we'll get something sorted out, but we want you in Orlando. And then kind of as the news continued, maybe him and Washington were seeing eye to eye on this decision for him to hold out. So you expect Davis Bertans to come back and be with this Wizards team next year?
I do expect him to come back. You know, they have made it clear he's the number one priority for their offseason. And I think by not trading him at the deadline, they kind of made it so that they have to keep him. Because they could have probably gotten a first-round pick, I think at least a protected first-round pick. They said the asking price was more like a lottery pick and an established young player on a rookie contract. They didn't get that offer, but they had some decent offers that they had to turn down. And the whole idea was they're going to re-sign this guy in the offseason. So if they don't re-sign him, then I think it'll be a situation that sort of blew up in the faces of the front office. So they've put all their chips into the middle of the table. They pretty much need to bring him back because they've made this bet with him. And I think there's also reason to believe that he'd be a really good player to put alongside John Wall if John Wall comes back from a ruptured Achilles, because you have one of the best catch-and-shoot players in the NBA. John Wall, you know, maybe even if the speed isn't there, his passing ability should still be there. Having a guy that all he has to do is throw the ball to him and, you know, a split second later, he's firing off a very accurate 3-point shot, I think could be just the type of security blanket you want to give John Wall as he comes back from a very serious injury.
You know, and let me talk to you a bit more about John Wall. We'll get to Bradley Beal. But Wall, you know, I'm someone I typically will find myself cheering for Kentucky when it comes to college basketball. I'm watching John Wall for a long time, and I always want to see him do well, and he shuts everything down, and you're like, man, this is unfortunate. And you can see people already starting to say, is this the worst contract in the NBA? Now, maybe it's my optimistic side, but then I heard him say, listen, I've been playing with bone spurs in my legs. You know how fast I'm going to be when I get back? And I can't help. I'm like, I buy it. He's going to be the fastest guy we've ever seen in NBA's history. What do you think about the return for John Wall? Do you think this organization is optimistic and excited about next season when they get back what he is claiming is better than 100% John Wall?
Well, you're right about the other injuries and the bone spurs he's been dealing with for a long time. Remember, he actually had surgery to remove bone spurs before he fell in his house and ruptured his Achilles. So there's been a lot of different injuries he's dealt with. There's been knee injuries. Really, the last full season he had was 2016-17. It was his age 26 season. His age 27, 28, and 29 seasons have been completely decimated by injuries. And I think the saddest part is the timing of those years, because Hoops Hype a few years ago did a really interesting research piece on the prime of NBA players. And they found that the average all NBA player was 27.7 years old. So John Wall was kind of robbed of the peak of his prime. Mm-hmm. Now, when he's coming back, he's coming off a very serious injury, but you mentioned the bone spur. So there's hope. And, you know, the fact that they're taking all this extra time off, there's added hope that he can come back and be something close to what he was during his prime. Like I said, that I think we last saw when he was 26 years old back in 2016-17. But we'll see. You know, there's some unprecedented elements to this. The fact that he's an all-star point guard, a guy whose game is largely predicated on speed coming back from this type of injury. Other guys have come back, like Dominique Wilkins. But, you know, the parameters haven't been the exact same for John Wall. What worries me the most, I think, is the defense. I think he'll be okay on offense. A lot of people say, well, you know, he's got to be the fastest guy on the court to be John Wall. He's still one of the best passers in the NBA. He's still 6'4 and a built guy. He's still going to have a size advantage over a lot of point guards. I think if he works in some post-ups, he's going to be just fine offensively. And the passing will still be there. And he's a decent enough shooter, I think, to be effective there. Defensively, I'm worried because he's going to have to stay in front of literally the quickest athletes on planet Earth, NBA point guards.
Right.
After an injury that supposedly affects your lateral quickness more than anything. And I think right now the Wizards do not have a very good defensive structure to mitigate some of those concerns. There's no rim protector. They don't really have physical perimeter defenders. I think if there was a more sound defensive structure, they'd be in better shape. But right now he's going to be kind of, you know, hanging out there in the wind until they shore up the defense around him.
Yeah, it'll be, I'm excited to see what he brings to the table. Also the idea that he's been doing this every year since he's been in the league, trying to figure out if he can get DeMarcus Cousins to join him. I'll be very, very interested. Let's talk a little bit about Bradley Beal. He was, you know, he made it clear that he was considering it. And once I saw that he was considering opting out, it's like, that feels like that's going to be the end result. And it was. What did you think about Bradley Beal's decision here?
Yeah, that wasn't surprising, as you said, just because in the days leading up, the Wizards were really vague about his status. He said that he hadn't made his final decision. 24 hours before they were supposed to get on a plane to Orlando, Scott Brooks said that they hadn't made a final decision and it was about conditioning and the medical staff. And he didn't have a previously disclosed injury. So that to me was fishy enough where I started writing my story before I even had like a real confirmation that it was going to happen. I didn't know it was going to be a shoulder injury because we hadn't heard about the shoulder injury in a long time. First heard it in November. So 8 months later, it was enough to keep him out of Orlando. But certainly you are, you know, I think it's understanding why he wouldn't go for a lot of the same reasons as Davis Bertans, although Bradley Beal has a contract, you know, for the future. But I think this year was all about next year for the Wizards when John Wall comes back, and this preserves Bradley Beal's health and makes sure that they get a real fair chance to see if John Wall and Bradley Beal can work together again.
Well, one thing that I thought might have pushed Beal to play is that he missed the All-Star game, and pretty much the reasoning was the team wasn't good enough. And if then the season would have ended with him in the playoffs on his back, I thought that might have pushed him a little bit, but I more than understand his decision. Let me ask you specifically something on Beal, because he is actually tied quite a bit to the team that they're going to be competing with, it seems like the most with, for that eighth seed in the Brooklyn Nets. What sense do you get from this organization in terms of how they view next season, whether Bradley Beal is actually available if the price is right?
Well, they're all in on next season. The Wizards front office, with John Wall coming back and the hope that Davis Bertans is re-signed. And Bradley Beal is all in, too. You know, he signed a contract extension in October. I know things can generally change very quickly with NBA players, as we saw with Paul George, who re-signed with the Oklahoma City Thunder and then changed his mind. Bradley Beal's not Paul George, and he's not Jimmy Butler. He's not Anthony Davis. He's not one of these guys that's looking for a way out. And it's kind of strange to watch just because what we're used to now with NBA stars, the league is more transient than it's ever been. These guys hop from place to place. It seems like sometimes they just get bored, even in situations where they're winning. They want to move on. Sometimes, you know, guys are on teams that are like the fourth or fifth seed in their conference and they want to move on. They want to, you know, join a super team. For some reason, Bradley Beal and John Wall, to a very great extent, they're just different. They're way more loyal than the average NBA star, and they want to see through what they've already started in Washington. So I think the Wizards have some time, and they're not going to trade Bradley Beal unless he wants to be traded, because they know their history of giving up on star players too early. You know, Chris Webber, Richard Hamilton, Rasheed Wallace, Ben Wallace. I could keep going.
Right.
That's kind of like the theme of their franchise, is just like trading away players that they shouldn't have traded. So now they have a guy who is one of the best players they've ever had, and they're now looking to get rid of him. So as long as Bradley Beal is happy in D.C., I don't see him going anywhere, and I don't think it's something that we really need to revisit until, you know, maybe at the earliest mid next season if things are really going south. And then you look at the trade deadline, you know, Bradley Beal could change his mind, but until he does, I don't think the Wizards will entertain any trade offers for him.
Chase, there's so much I can get to with this team, and everybody, make sure you do follow all of his coverage over at NBC Sports Washington. The last thing I want to ask, and I've only got about 30 seconds here, this Wizards, this eight-game stretch, does it result in them getting into the play-in? And if yes, does this team make the playoffs?
I think they do make the play-in. You know, they're depleted, but so are the Brooklyn Nets. And, you know, when I look at this roster, the Washington Wizards, a lot of the guys that are going to play minutes were on the court for some of their biggest wins of the season. You know, when Bradley Beal and Davis Bertans were both out, they went 3-3. They beat teams like the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. So when they only have their young guys out there, they play a brand of team basketball that I think could catch anyone by surprise any given night. So I wouldn't be surprised if they got in that play-in tournament. As far as the playoffs, I don't know. You know, the Orlando Magic are 4-0 against them this season. If that's their matchup, that's going to be tough. They have their number. But I think they get to the play-in tournament just because Brooklyn is so depleted.
Great stuff from Chase Hughes. Follow his work over at Chase Hughes NBCS on Twitter. Chase, thanks for hanging out with us, man. We'll have to do it again soon. Keep it right here on BATR for more on the Sports Grid.
Thanks a lot. Anytime.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, here we go. Back here on Betting Around the Rim, BATR. I'm Kevin Walsh. That is Martino Puccio. Thanks once again to Chase Hughes for joining us here on Betting Around the Rim. Great stuff from Chase. Martino, I thought it was pretty interesting just listening to him at the end there talk about this Wizards team and how they play with their young group. And we know, right, young guys, they have the ability to be scrappy. Like, Rui Hachimura is not going to show up there and be like, whatever, I'm tanking. Like, he's going out there. He's going to look to build
like the Grizzlies.
He's almost like a sophomore, right? Like, if that's something that, you know, we've talked about with Ja, we talked about with Zion a bit, Rui as well, right? So I think we could see some good stuff from him. We talked win totals. I mean, the number is 1.5. And even that first game that they're going up against the Suns is 6.5-point dogs. Like, you know, what do you think here about this Suns team going into the restart?
Suns or Wizards?
Or the Wizards, excuse me.
Yeah, I know, because you're talking about Wizards all the time. Yeah, no, I think I like the point that he made about how both of you, with the scrappiness part, because it kind of like reminds me of when we had Anthony Sain on, and he was talking about how the Grizzlies are a very scrappy bunch. We saw them fighting. It's a younger squad. I've seen it with my Celtics teams when they were going deep. They like to prove themselves, right, because they're still kind of unproven. Same thing with Rui. I mean, he can be a lottery pick. He was great at Gonzaga. We know all those things, but at the end of the day, there are still question marks there, and there's no better platform than to do it right now in this bubble. 1.5, yeah, I mean, just think about it. All they have to do is get one, right? And then next thing you know, at the back end of that 7th or 8th game, say a team really doesn't care anymore. They have nothing to play for, but all these guys have something to play for. They just get a second win, right? They're still 2-6. You still get your lottery pick, right? Even if they're not within the 4 games, because I do think Orlando is going to distance themselves. They might be able to play Brooklyn, but I still think Brooklyn has enough talent to do it. Mm-hmm. But I think in general, just a future thing with the Wizards that I find very fascinating is the Bradley Beal situation with him staying there.
Yeah.
Only because we've heard so many reports and stories over the years on how him and John Wall don't get along. There's friction there. You know, him being so upset about not making an All-Star game, and a lot of that having to do with the Wizards' record and how well they were playing, right? Because a lot of people like to say empty stats. But to see and hear that he is committed, where he's right at the prime that he was talking about, he's 27 years old right now. So with stuff like that, to me, I think that's a pretty positive sign. And I still think they can get a pretty decent player. And then even all the points about John Wall, too. Yeah, like, his whole game is predicated on his speed. if you're coming back from an Achilles injury, I know he's like, oh, it's the bone spurs, like, that'll be better. Yeah, sure, that might be true, but at the same time, you're still coming back from an Achilles, and you have a lot of miles on those legs that people forget. This kid's been up, well, he's not a kid anymore. He's been up since he was 19, 18 years old, right? You know, because that's a very long time if we think about it. It's around a decade now, so that's a lot of miles. Not everyone's LeBron James where they could play all these minutes and be okay. So, for them, I'm excited for it, but kind of asking for Rui, like, does he take that mini jump that we've seen with a lot of young stars and players that I've seen in soccer, where this 3 or 4 month break has paid endless dividends for them? Like, what does he take that, like, mini jump? Like, it's like a pre-sophomore jump, because it's not really a sophomore season, but the break might as well be a sophomore season. So I'm excited in a way for them.
Yeah, I laugh a bit there, though, because I know you're very strict about who's a kid and who isn't. And
I know, but it's true, though, because a lot of these guys they've been around forever, like Bradley Beal.
Oh, yeah.
But he's 27. He's 2 years older than me. Like, he's barely older than me. But yeah. John Wall is, I mean, he's not old, but
he's older.
Years. He's got the miles, yeah.
The Wizards' schedule is interesting, because the two best chances they have to win a game are their first two games.
Yeah.
Against the Suns and the Nets. And that's the thing. Like, you realistically could get their win total to come home in the first two games. Like, they could start 2-0. Past that, they play Indiana, Philly, New Orleans.
I think Indiana's, not out of the realm of possibility. I don't know. Indiana's not invincible. Indiana's finishing 6th.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I agree with that totally. And then they play the Pelicans, the Thunder. What's interesting to me is their last two games. The last game they play is against the Celtics. And the Celtics can still beat this team with a B-squad. Here's why Milwaukee's fascinating to me as their second-to-last game.
Sure.
If you're the Bucks, not in a way that you're trying to lose to get a certain opponent, because then it's the old adage, careful what you wish for.
Sure.
But do you think there would be value in, you know, if all of a sudden, by chance,
facing the Wizards in a four-game series?
And not even that, but just the fact that you get to trigger a play-in game. Just make them play an extra day. Like, I wonder if they would view that as a positive to force the Nets to play a competitive game against the Wizards.
I think it's all a positive, too, because even then you don't have to play the Giannis, the Middletons of the world. You give Dante DiVincenzo some more burn, Connington more burn. You know, those are valuable developmental minutes as they head into the playoffs again, right? Because a lot of people, I don't think, give a lot of credit to those two guys that I mentioned. Obviously, there's all the other players that they have in that team, especially the Lopez brothers. But the fact that they're able to be in this position where they could still grow, not risk a lot, and be in the best position possible, I mean, this is really, the bubble really works well for the Bucks. It doesn't favor any other team more, in my opinion. I think the Lakers are kind of right there. I think the rest help more LeBron and, like, AD than most would like to admit. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's really hard to argue how any scenario here, like, I have the Magic going on the 7th seed. That's huge. Like, can you imagine how much easier it is for Giannis to go against whatever wings the Wizards or Nets throw at him opposed to a Jonathan Isaac of the world? I mean, that's a massive difference. We're talking about a potential all-defensive player one day in Isaac as soon as next year, in my opinion. So I really do think you're right in that. And I do think, I don't know. I think it's going to be, we're going to start seeing where the Bucks are with their rotations around the 4th game, to be honest with you. I really do. I think they'll use the first few games to get their conditioning up. And then, listen, they're playing guys in real competitive NBA games. Giannis wasn't getting that much time. How much time do you really think he's going to be getting in these? It's just really not worth it for them, right? So for me, I do. What about the Bucks under? Because I guess if we're like on them for that win total, is that...
The Bucks, let's pull these Bucks numbers. I know it was 5.5. It was -130 to get over. And it moved a bit, though. People started betting this under a little bit. It's now +110 for them under 5.5. Their schedule, they start with Boston. Then it's Houston, Brooklyn, Miami, Dallas, then Toronto. Last two games, Wizards, Grizzlies.
That's a 6-4. I definitely see a possibility. They've had tough times against Miami. They've struggled against Toronto to an extent. Boston can beat them. Grizzlies, I'm not counting anything out on the back end of that schedule, which you mentioned, right? Because they're still going to have a lot to fight for. Do you see 5-5? I do. I see 5-5 with the way that they might approach it. Definitely.
Right? It's only the 8 games, so it's not even like it's 5-3, which is still a good record, right? So.
Oh yeah, five. I don't know why I was thinking 10.
No, because 10 is a because 10 is a significantly more normal number. Yeah, but like, I would say Boston, Houston, Miami, and Toronto, right, are all games that would give them a tough time. That's half the games. And that doesn't even then factor in the Brooklyn, Memphis, Washington games, where those are three teams that are really competing for something. It leaves out a Dallas game that, you know, has Luka Doncic. They lost to actually in Milwaukee this year.
So much without Luka Doncic. Important for them. They have. Yeah, they like, still have a lot to play for.
I think it's. I think it is interesting. I don't think this is any type of cakewalk for the Bucks. I just the problem with Milwaukee is also they only need to really win one game. And then the one seed's locked up. And they're going to win a game, obviously. The one seed's locked up. So they can do really whatever they want.
But even then, the Raptors have a really tough schedule, too. Like,
let's talk a little bit about Toronto. Because we've now talked about the top of the East, right? Boston's interesting. It's hard to know what we want to do when it comes to this Bucks team. The Raptors are interesting. Because there is a lot of value, I think, in playing the – Does that still hold true? Would you still much rather play the Magic than the Pacers? Yes, right?
Yeah, I'd rather play the Magic.
I think so.
But it's tough. It's because I do think to an extent the Sabonis Turners of the world and just Indiana as a whole, that organization still has that culture where they're going to be scrappy all the time. Like whenever you kind of look at them in a regular season game, you're like, oh, Pacers. We look at the Pacers on paper, they're not very good, but every single time you head to Indiana, it's a tough game, and it's a scrappy one. And I understand we're not in Indiana at this point, but still, I do think there is that angle where you're working it that Oladipo isn't there. These guys want to prove themselves a lot more because Sabonis is having his best season of his career right now. So I do think to an extent that's true, but... Listen, if Orlando has a good amount of their guys, I don't know. It'll be tough, but I think I'd rather play the Magic, yes.
Yeah, and I think for the Raptors, I could see Boston pushing them here. You look at this, the Raptors number is 4.5. It's minus 110 on both sides for Toronto. You look at this schedule, they start with the Lakers, then they play, and it'll be the Lakers' second game, by the way, which is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Then they'll play Miami, Orlando, Boston, Memphis, Milwaukee, Philly, Denver. That's not easy.
No, it's not. It's not. I don't know. I think it's one of those that they're too good. They're very good. They're awesome. The Raptors? They weren't healthy. Yeah, I really do think that. I do think they're that disrespected. And I'm not saying you are doing that. I think... That's the general consensus because we always have to think about that, right? Do I care about the general public's opinion of stuff? Obviously not. They're idiots a lot of the time, and it's to not their fault. They're not as into it as we are, but they're the ones who affect these lines, right? And these odds. So we have to take into account. We have to have a pulse on it. So that's why I'm always arguing with guys who have like 10 numbers in their name in their handle, and they have LeGoat or whoever else it is or. Right. You know, Fultz time or something. So for that, it matters. And you know what? It's just Toronto. Toronto's had the best odds for everything. I still think they have the best odds for the futures. I don't know.
I think this as well with Toronto. 4.5, right? So it's only minus 110. Yeah. I think they could beat the Lakers that first game. I absolutely think they could beat the Lakers in that first matchup. You look through it as well. You know, it depends when they play Milwaukee. That Boston game is interesting. Like, they're an interesting team, and them being 5-3 is totally reasonable. Let's hit a break. Let's come back, and let's wrap up another edition here of Betting Around the Rim on the Sports Grid. That's next. Keep it locked right here.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All All right, let's close it up here on Betting Around the Rim, BATR. I'm Kevin Walsh. That is Martino Puccio. We've talked about the top of the East, those top three teams, the Bucks, the Celtics, and the Raptors. Let's look at some of the middle group because we also spent a lot of time in the back end, right? So really, yeah. Miami, Philly, and Indiana we should talk about a bit. I want to start with Indiana, who have a win total of 4.5, minus 200 to go over that number, plus 170 if you think that this team can win five games. I look at their schedule. There's three games they're definitely going to be favored in. The others, it's going to be tough to see. So they're going to start with Philly. We already know that their dog's there. Their next three, then, are Washington, Orlando, and Phoenix. But that means that they're going to have to win three in a row, probably, for you to feel good about that bet. They then close up with the Lakers, Miami, Houston, Miami again. They're going to be dogs in all of those games unless the Lakers are resting. You know, Miami's got a tough schedule. Those are going to be competitive games for sure. Mm-hmm. You look at it for this Pacers team. You look at those eight games. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I feel great about laying 200 on them to be 4-4 or worse, but the 170 is not enough to get me to think that this is going to be anything. That this is going to be a 5-3 or a 6-2 team.
No, it's not, because also I'm not paying attention to where they're dogs, right? I'm paying attention to where they're favorites. Where do they mess up? Phoenix. I really do. I honestly think, again, with this Booker angle, this guy is very motivated. And I'm looking towards the Pacers, and I'm thinking, if Oladipo was there, I would have... By the way, awful timing by us, because we said Oladipo wasn't going to go, and I said definitely not going after the 55%, right. And then before it happened, I said he's definitely not going, and he didn't go.
Yeah.
But that would have been one of the guys that would have said, okay, if Oladipo's there, effort, tempo up, definitely. He's able to not put the clamps on Devin Booker, because you don't stop great players and great scorers. Mm-hmm. You can only hope to contain them. That would have been something. For me, Booker, I don't know. It's just, again, there's something about these platforms with these younger stars who, again, Booker's one of those disrespected players in the NBA in general. And I know there's that kind of minutes restriction again with Phoenix, but Phoenix can have anyone any given night. And you know what? That's the situation. You just said it again. You're favored in three straight games. And then you got the back-end difficult games. Like, does Indiana go all out to take the games that they know they need to take? Or is it just, hey, are we going to have to live with this six seed? Because that's really what it's looking like. And I think it's just this Miami-Philly first-round matchup, which I think is going to be the best out of the Eastern Conference.
Oh, yeah. It would be fantastic. Let's talk Miami. They are also at 4.5, also minus money to that under, but it's only minus 175. Plus 150 if you would think that this team can win five basketball games. They're going to be dogs in their first four. They're going to be favored in the last four. They start with Denver, Toronto, Boston, Milwaukee. They are the type of team that can beat any of those teams. I think they can beat any of those teams. I think they're dogs against Denver, and I'm intrigued by that line. Jokic is going to be a late arrival. I think you might be onto something with that one as well.
Bam's going to physically dominate him. I'm not even kidding. Like, why am I going to rely on skinny Nikola Jokic in this new body against this physical freak in Bam Adebayo, who's able to guard any big man and player on the perimeter and in the paint? Why would I go against that? And Jimmy Butler on rest? That guy's a psychopath.
Yeah. You want to talk about someone that I think will be locked in? Because I think there is something about Miami wanting to not drop back to a six, but also, now I don't think it's going to happen. I just mentioned I like a Boston over probably. But if somehow the Celtics stumbled out of the gate, they could get themselves to a three line.
Yeah.
But look, if they win that Denver game, you know, I got a nice edge up. They're back for Phoenix, Indiana, OKC, and then Indiana again. I think at a plus money number, Eric Spoelstra, the coach, Jimmy B, Bam Adebayo, I could be interested in, you know, this team getting to five or six wins.
I think this has a lot to do with the culture stuff. I just think the Heat have one of the five best cultures in the NBA. I think they have a better culture than the Lakers. And it's not a disrespectful thing to the Lakers. It's just the way their organization runs themselves. I think the Spurs, to an extent, they still have that culture there, but the talent is measured. The Spurs are kind of like where your Heat were like a year or two ago. Right now, with the Heat, for me, they're really like the Celtics like a year or two ago, where there's talent on this roster. It might not be there with the veteran leadership. You know, Jimmy's kind of like that Al Horford type. Bam and the Duncan Robinsons of the world and the Tyler Heroes are kind of in the lower of the pecking order, where they're these young budding stars that have a lot of confidence. And, you know, there's not as much pressure for them now because they don't know what pressure to feel, right?
Yeah.
Because they haven't been there before. They don't kind of get how difficult it is to be in these positions and to advance to the next round. So for me, I think the toughest one out of all of them, I think the Thunder game is going to be tougher than the Denver game.
Yeah, and I like that. The Thunder are in a really interesting spot in what they're going to be competing for. Let's as well then make sure we hit all these pretty much we will have hit all the East then, which I like. The Sixers are at 5.5. The other teams that are on 5.5 are the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Bucks. The difference with Philly is they're +140 to get over this number. However, it was +170. People have been backing this Philly team. And it's very simple why. It's not because, I mean, yes, it's Embiid. Yes, it's Simmons and Southie. It's the schedule. First six games, Martino. Pacers, Spurs, Wizards, Magic, Blazers, Suns. They are going to be, I believe, 5-point favorites in all of those games, at least.
They're gonna win them all.
And they close up with Toronto and Houston. I'd say those are winnable games for this team as well. I guess it's somewhat to what we talked about of having to win consecutively. You'd think Philly comes out focused and does what they should do here. I'm not gonna say run the table. Anything other than in those first six games, other than 5-1, would be disappointing.
If they go anything other than 5-1, I would consider 4-2 if they got a close loss in one of those two. I'm taking Miami in that series. They play 4-5.
Yeah.
I'm not. Yep. I don't trust Philly. This is it. I don't care what anyone says, and I've said this time and time again. I do believe in their talent. Prior to the season, I had them going to the finals against the Lakers. This is it now. There's no excuses. I understand there's some injury and health concerns with some of these players, but you pay up big for Tobias Harris. Step the hell up, man. Al Horford. You getting that kind of money? You're coming off the bench now. You better be the best damn bench player since Manu Ginobili. Because there's no excuses, right? And then even then, you have Ben Simmons, who I am going to give him a pass if he struggles a little bit.
Yeah.
I honestly, like, back injuries are not something to be messed with. Joel Embiid, if you are not injured, but you're out of shape, I'm done with you. I really am. Like, there's nothing else to say there. There's no excuse for some of this stuff. And the Philadelphia 76ers have the least amount of excuses besides the Bucks in this whole Eastern Conference playoffs. They really do for me. Like, the expectation versus the reality of where the Sixers are at right now, they failed miserably more than any team in the NBA. They really have. And I don't think it's close. So, you know what? It's put up or shut up at this point. And this is the final time I will be putting something on this core with the Sixers and Brett Brown. Because other than that, I'm done with them.
Yeah, and I think everything you're saying is true. If this team does not put something together here, they are going to find themselves. There's going to be a massive change. What is it going to be? It's hard to say, but there is going to be a change. There has to be a change. I don't remember if they were favored to win the East or if the Bucks were, but I know they were right there.
They were top two. Because people were high on Boston.
Yep.
The Toronto thing with Kawhi leaving.
Let me look up their exact record, because I want to make sure that I can put this fully into perspective for people.
So
right?
how much are you taking into account of this neutral court thing? Because this is something we discuss every single damn week with them. I think it's going to benefit them, because you'd rather a team play neutral than have to go on the road where they're absolutely abysmal on, right? Because whenever you just a casual fan goes up to you and they're like, oh, why is I thought Philly's like a really good team. Why aren't they winning on the road tonight? And you're just like, well, it's harder to play on the road. And go to you, okay, why is it hard to play on the road? Oh, just the whole atmosphere, making that travel. You know, the crowd is behind the home team. And players just pick off and feed off of that energy. And you're like, okay, how many of those factors that I just mentioned are not in this?
Right.
Every single one of them. So now you're, again, goes back to no excuses here. So to me, I think it's beneficiary for them that they don't have to go on the road.
The thing with that is, like, if the Sixers, so they played 34 road games, if they were 17-17, they'd be a half game back of the Raptors. They'd have the same amount of wins. And the Raptors are 23-9 on the road. That's not even like, I'm not even saying if, oh, Philly was good on the road. No, no. If they were just even on the road, they'd be a half game back for the two seed. That's how bad they've been on the road.
You're a firm believer of good teams win at home, great teams win on the road. Are you?
Absolutely.
I believe that too. But when it comes down to, say, like, I know they weren't 17-17, but if you're like, say they were just even that, how much more confident are you in them? Because then you're kind of like looking at it like, can they steal two games on the road? Or is it just really like a one game ceiling that they steal?
I don't know. I think that we talked about this a little bit last week in that I would say for those teams that struggled on the road, this is better for them. Because you should get – you're not traveling anymore. You should be focused at all times. I don't think that they only know how to play well in front of fans. Like, I think there has to be something that can work out for this basketball team. And there's so much talent there. Like, this is the shot for them. The danger in all of this is Miami is a bad matchup for them potentially. At least it was during – they lost two games at home. One of them was to the – 14-9 road record Miami Heat. Like, then if they advance through that 4-5, they play Milwaukee. Yeah. Like, them going out there and winning does put them on a harder path, but it's all inevitable anyway. I mean, the Raptors held Joel Embiid to 0 points a game in Toronto. Like, there's nothing easy that's going to come for
What's with these guys with scoring under 5 points in games that they have to win? Ben gets one in a playoff. Joel, zero. That's still the most embarrassing regular season game I've seen ever.
I think we're looking at a situation, Martino, as we peel through this all, right? In terms of, like, if somebody comes out, like, if the Clippers struggle, right? Like, you know what, man? It's a reset. Who knows? I don't know what to say. I don't think there's going to be that level of mercy for Philly and then for Houston. I think those are the two teams that people are going to be like, listen, you better – we need to see it. We need to see. Because Houston as well has a light-ish schedule. They have the chance to move all the way up to, like, the 3 seed.
There's the thing with Houston real quick, though, before we head out, is that Houston, at the end of the day, they're going to judge them harshly just because of the two individual best players that they have, not because they've been playing together for an X amount of time. With Philly, it's the same thing.
Yeah, that's true. That's Martino Puccio. I'm Kevin Walsh. This has been VATR. Great stuff. We'll see you guys next week right here on the Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.